Then we read further, maybe down on 52, page 52, and Cancer Planet Mission, or Ralph Pullman, later published in English by Stevens. Next, this part. Because of my specialist knowledge of milling and pulverizing machinery, I was invited to work with the university people on the whole series of experiments. I gladly accepted the invitation and helped in making many grinding tests using different components. Finally, we settled for a fine mixture of cotton seed and corn flour with one or two other ingredients added in small quantities. This flour was excellent for making tortilla patties and bread. More to the point, my organization's machinery could cope with the grinding process, as I was able to show the authorities. The Peruvians were very well satisfied with the equipment my organization sent over. The result was that the government authorized me to erect a pilot plant in the university itself, earmarking a large area of the grounds for this purpose. Now, the work at Tingo Maria and Lima during the last months of 1966 had been intensive and exhausting. It had lasted for something like 3 months, and during that time I don't think I had a full day off. So while waiting for preparatory work to be carried out on the university campus, I took a few days busman's holiday and set off for nearby Colombia in order to have a brief change and also to inspect the Bakelite pulverizing plant, which I had installed some years before. The American manager of the plant was an old business acquaintance of mine. He would welcome the chance to hear my suggestion might enable them to increase the output of the pulverizing equipment of their plant. I also welcomed the opportunity to spend Christmas in Colombia, a country which I like very much. I left the comforts of Lima and set off for Cali in Colombia, where the plant was located. Mr. Jansen, the president of the firm, was pleased to see me. The plant was a good nick, the maintenance first class. I went over it with a small comb, however, and satisfied myself that, barring accidents, the machinery would last a good number of years. It took the two of us the best part of all day to inspect the installation. When we had finished our work, Jensen drove me in a jeep to the country club, which was situated on the river Cauca. I remember that as we drove there, we chatted about the paradox of the Indians of the area living in abject poverty, while the waste Amazonian backlands were a potential source of unlimited vegetable and mineral wealth. Extradition was the problem. The country club provided all the armamentis of civilization, and I was able to relax for 3 whole days in Cali. I felt much refreshed and would have liked to have stayed there for a longer time, but I was working to a fine schedule. The foundation work for the pilot scheme in Lima was due to be completed within a week. I had heard so much about the endless tropical hell of the American jungle that I decided to return to Lima by the craziest route imaginable. There was one snag. There were no jet flights in those territories. true, there were local airlines, but you could well find yourself in a plane where the doors were locked with a strip of telephone wire. If you went to the toilet, you lifted the seat and found yourself looking straight down to the, at the ground, some 12,000 feet below, 4,000 meters. As well as carrying passengers, these local lines also hump freight, so you could well be sitting among old kitchen equipment, metal tables, rusty chairs, ancient refrigerators, and so on. The plane I took on my crazy journey back to Lima was grossly overloaded. This was reflected in takeoff. The plane hurtled down the runway and seemed too reluctant to leave it. When the end of the runway was perilously close, the plane was grudging yard of the ground. I prayed to all the saints that that were no hoardings, trees, and tall obstructions in the takeoff path. My prayers must have been answered, for the plane eventually gained high without stalling. I breathed once more. These old-time planes are piloted by the best-dressed pilots I have ever encountered in all my travels. They are perfumed and moustachios, wear white gloves, and have a charm of nonchalance all their own. They are not in the least bit worried about the lack of attitude when hurtling down a runway. It takes a little more time to get allowed into the air, and that is all that concerns them. The flight from Cali is an endless one over treetops until altitude was to be gained in order to cross the backbone of the Andes. Once over the over the towering peaks, there is a descent until the flight path levels once more over the jungle, the endless jungle, the last remaining. And a concord natural wonder of the world, a land with a thousands of rivers and lakes, its deadly snakes and insects, its horrible piranhas, the most carnivorous of all fish, this cursed part of the last estancia del Diablo, the last remaining foothold of the devil of earth, with its clean-picked skeletons along the riverbanks, its furious cannibals and constant death. This region is a challenge to the few remaining adventurers. It is the land of mighty Amazon, the labyrinths Guatamara, Yuria, Peria, Putumayo, and Ucayali. From the air it seems as if no living soul could remain alive one single day within this inhospitable, murderous jungle. Most of the area is still unexplored, unvisited by modern man. This fact is indicated by white patches on even the best maps. A convention in map making that hides the vastness of the swamps and the countless tributaries of the many mighty rivers. But those self-same swamps have given birth to Indians at once, the most stoical and most cruel on earth. It has been known for one of them to wander from the forest with the hand hacked off at the wrist. There is just no way from his face how he's reacting. There is just no way to make these Indians show emotions if they do not want to do so. Incas or Aztecas of the highlands are just as impassive as their brothers of the swamps. When the Spanish Inquisition burned the feet of the Indians after they had stolen their land, they simply would not believe that mortal man could be possessed by such courage. Some Spaniards went back to Spain and told their compatriots that they had murdered the rain or sun gods in person. Under the most acute pain, they looked at them with loathing as the flames consumed the lower part of their bodies. Perhaps is the effect of the coca chewing habit of the Amazon Indians that makes them impervious to emotion. Whatever it is, their conduct under stress remains one of the mysteries of human behavior. After some hours of jungle hopping and with the necessary modicum of luck, the endless waves of trees tops give way to the mightiest river in the world. They plan lands and you step into the natural Turkish bath of the Amazonian interior. Now you know why most of the Amazon Indians wander around naked with the heat. Who needs clothes? At a small airport, I was met by Mr. Mike Taklikis, a dealer in animals, birds, reptiles, and fish. He was great as a host and, incidentally, the perfect amphitryon to those in need of adventure. He took me along to his estancia, where he keeps a fine collection of snakes, monkeys, and other elements of his stock in trade. He has also an office from which his function as the consular agent of the USA. I mentioned it's the Tsalikis secondary occupation of amphitryon because he acts as a go-between for many people who briefly seek escape from the pressures of modern civilization and who come to take a quick look at this part of the still natural savage world. These people do not come merely to hunt and fish. Many of them wish to see how the Amazonian Indian lives in his native habitat. Providing all these services is the work of an amphitryon because he acts as a go-between for many in good measure. In his office he keeps a printed list of excursions which are available for the adventure seekers. He refers to them as trippers. On page 3 of this list there is following information, column. Service number 5. 30-minute boat trip to Mariacu Indian village in nearby Brazil, home of the Tiuco Indians. Here is an opportunity to observe their traditions, customs, and items used in everyday living. By chance, the hair pulling ceremony may also be observed if scheduled by the family concerned. Duration 4 hours. The list does not explain if those 4 hours are devoted entirely to the hair-pulling ceremony. This ceremony is in fact performed on some naked forest beauty private parts. You would imagine that with all the teeming life in the forest, a lot of fellows from Chicago and other North American cities would be coming down to this neck of the wood for the hunting and fishing. Mr. Tsalikis assured me, however, that this his boatman who chaperon the visitors tell him that they come down merely to take pictures of the hair-pulling ceremony. I would have liked to have gone up hunting trip with Mike Tsalikis some 40 miles upriver, where the evergreen lakes of Lorotokyo-Toyaku are situated. But unfortunately, I was taken ill and had to stay in bed when the others set off. The jaguars, ocelots, tapirs, and capybaras would all have to wait until I got better. I became so ill that I really thought I was going to die. Lite Sia, where Mike Zalikis is stationed, is situated some 2,000 miles from the mouth of the Amazon. It is just south of Ecuador and has a very small population. I was suffering from kidney trouble, and a kidney operation in Leticia was just not on. The town in the streets, apart from catering for a small tourist trade, are making soap and soft drinks. This economy does not need a very large labor force, so there is no need for a fully equipped hospital in the town. My best chance for survival was to take the military flying boat to Iquitos, the capital of the state of Loreto in nearby Peru. I hope nobody else has to endure the torture of several kidney attack in the cockpit of a military flying boat, with the temperature at 110 Fahrenheit. The ancient aircraft I flew in was nearly 20 years old and looked it. But there was simply no other way of getting to Iquitos from Mike Zalikis' place. There are just no civilian air services between Leticia, which is Colombia, and Iquitos, which, as I've said, is over the border in Peru. Just to get into the ramshackle flying boat was an adventure itself. You have to cross the tremendous Amazon swamp where the Indian River settlement is situated. There is a mighty splash of muddy water. A door opens and you are invited to climb aboard. The Peruvian Air Force unit stationed at Loreto's border with Ecuador offers you this remarkable passenger service twice a week. The funny thing was that when I clambered off the flying boat at Iquitos, I felt a little better. I was given a friendly warning about the poor service at the Iquitos hospital, so I decided to postpone the operation and wait until I could catch a flight back to Lima. In Iquitos, one hears all sorts of stories about a man who had dared to invade this second hell, the Amazon jungle. The name of Emmanuel Kunt springs to mind, as does that of Colonel Fawcett, the famous British adventurer who discovered many new rivers, lakes, and Indian tribes. He was lost without trace, and are the many brave explorers having entered the labyrinths of no return. Of course, it is not all jungle. The big rivers, such as the Purua, Moranon, Ucayali, and the Amazon itself, have sizable towns strung along their banks. In these towns there are schools and a certain standard of education. There are also the missions, the innumerable isolated villages strung like small beds along the thousands of miles of the water courses from source to mouth. A very large population in the aggregate live in these river towns, missions, and villages. Unhappily, it is no exaggeration to say that for every 10 people living in these communities, 8 suffer from disease, one kind or another. The drugstores of the larger settlement do a very thriving business. There is no on every street corner. There is one on every street corner. On the upper Ukaili, a lot of victims paralyzed by the dreadful beriberi sickness may be seen. They hobble along on crutches everywhere, begging for a coin. When nobody decides to wander into the jungle, it is fiesta time for the insects. They wait for their prey, even, I swear, working a swift system as not to miss anybody. The insects working the night shifts are not the same as those working the early morning and late afternoon shifts. There are thousands of different types of insects, carrying hundreds of different types of diseases. Some of the insects are so small that they cannot be detected by the naked eye, but they are just as deadly as the larger visible ones. And here comes a footnote, down on page 83 in the original book. Footnote: however, most Indian tribes, having no contact with civilization, are healthy and content. It is civilization and half-civilization which keeps the river Indian in sickness. There have been 22 minutes here, so I go on next page. It's page 60. Index in the original book to left, upper left corner. Page 60. Fish can be unpleasant as well. Again, they do not have to be big fish. I have already mentioned the piranha. Piranha, this little monster name, is sometimes spelled piranha. No matter how the name is spelled, the fish is just deadly. The piranha attack in force whenever a hand or foot is put into the water. They haunt the vicinity of the riverside slaughterhouses, but the smell of blood from any animal anywhere at time makes them the most deadly of living creatures. Within a matter of seconds, they are capable of stripping a man or an animal to the bone. But vegetation can be just as deadly. You have to watch out for poisonous leaves, sticks, and sharp as needles, thorny vines, as dangerous as barbed wire, all competing in nature in an horrible game, the fight to survive. Whilst waiting for transport from Iquitos, I made the acquaintance of a delightful American lady and her husband, a retired army officer. They were both enthusiastic amateur anthropologists who spent 2 hours telling me about their hobby. A few days before I met them, Colonel and Mrs. Thompson, who came from Texas, had tried to locate the young guide who was supposed to know all the answers concerning survival in the jungle, particularly if the intruders into the green hell were merely curious and inexperienced. The middle-aged colonel and his wife were both curious. They wanted to pay a short visit into the heart of the jungle, a risky venture that even the strongest and fittest young man of Iquitos fights shy of making. The Thompsons wished to contact the cannibals who they believed live happy and without care inside the jungle and not near the river where civilization has ruined their health and natural habits. Next page. They told me that they had found this particular guide in a carpenter's shop where he was repairing his outboard motor boat. The guide was a most unlike red-haired Australian who supported an 8-month beard. He had My new friends informed me wild crazy eyes and was prompt to making nervous gestures. That the guide was Colonel Thompson's husband to inform me, a very interesting man indeed. The Thompsons proved delightful contours for my benefit. They reenacted the scene at the Hotel de las Turistas, where the three of them had gone to discuss the expedition over a round of drinks. I'll make you for $200 each, said the guide. Payable in advance, he added, as an transient afterthought. All right, replied the colonel. You'll have to be prepared to live on monkey meat and snakes for a couple of weeks, continued the young Australian. Have you ever eaten monkey meat? Asked Mrs. Thompson. Many times, the red-haired Australian replied. It just tastes like human flesh. Mrs. Thompson reported that she almost fainted on the spot. Oh, it's all right, the guide assured her when she had recovered her composure. It isn't so bad if it's roasted. As a matter of fact, my friends on the Yavari River know how to prepare a dead body so that it eats just like Christmas turkey. The colonel had tried to stop the guide from speaking in this way, but an Australian was not to be put off. If you return from the trip, you're never the same animal. It is easy for you to shiver and look disgust, but if you are forced to go hungry for weeks, why should the flesh of a dead old woman be any different from the meat of any old bird? I made a few conventional remarks after the Thompsons had related their anecdote. Did you make the trip? I asked, then immediately answered myself, no, of course you didn't. You say all that happened just a few days ago. You must have changed your minds. You bet we did, said Colonel Thompson emphatically. Why, if we had gone on to that trip and had got lost in the jungle, that fellow would have eaten my wife and thought nothing about it. Evidently, the amateur anthropologist must have been very shaken by the episode. The very next day, they went along to the office of Peruvian Airline in order to see about booking a return flight to Dallas, Texas. I decided that the colonel had been right. The red-haired Australian guide seemed the most interesting character. After what I had seen and experienced in India and in other parts of the world, I did not think that I would turn squeamish over anything that this young man would be likely to tell me. So I sought him out and found him in that same carpenter's shop that the Thompsons had described. It was down on page 86, in the original book. You know, he said, these people, not just the Thompsons, but all others like them who come to this outlandish spot are right in their way, but they take their prejudices with them like an extra skill wherever they go. You need years to prepare yourself for the jungle, and most white people turn savage themselves while doing so. Besides, it is to blame these Indians if they eat their dead ones instead of cremating them. A piece of meat carefully roasted over a hot fire loses its identity. It could be beef, chicken, monkey, or man. And what is more, its natural way of getting rid of the dead. Perfectly natural, as you'll agree if you watch the other creature doing it. It's the natural justification of killing to appease hunger. He paused for a moment, but I offered no comment. I was happy to let him ramble on, expounding his philosophy. On the other side of the Yavari River, the red-haired guide continued, I saw several white explorers turned native. They were the craziest bunch of nuts I ever saw. I'd been down with the fever for several days when I ran into them. I thought I was still delirious when I first saw them. The funniest people I've ever met. Their hands so strange that I thought them to be from a different world. I pricked up my ears at this, but again kept my mouth shut. They might have talked a lot of nonsense, but they were such fine engineers. They even fixed a broken outboard propeller blade for me, so that I could get back to Yavari. It was the last of four blades that I'd started with, so you can judge how glad I was. For all their craziness, they were good at dodging as well. The Australian accepted with alacrity my invitation to go across to the hotel for drinking session and did not mind at all when I started to pump him about his adventures. This fellow with a funny mouth, a legendary legacy from some fever, I suppose, gave me a tablet to swallow. I felt better almost immediately. Then he gave me some fruit juice. That was the best juice I've ever tasted. Yes, they were white folk turned native, all right. I told them to give it up and come back to civilization, but they refused. As for me, as soon as I was completely well, I came back out of the jungle as though all the devils in hell on my tail. Did anybody else see them white natives? I asked. I doubt it. I don't suppose anybody believed me when I told my tale. Later, I went upstream to the Yavari to Bolognese, that right up on the Brazilian border. I felt great. That tablet must have lasted a long time. I told the missionaries on the Brazil side of the border that I'd seen there on the Yavari River. They wouldn't believe a word I said. Made out it was the fever. Said no man would dare to go into cannibal country, and that Christian and non-Christian having your head shrunk to the size of an apple was no way of getting to heaven. I wouldn't argue with them. I know what I saw out there. That was down on page 88. Next is, index is 65, right top of the old index. So I stop here. It's gone more than half an hour. Continues on next file then.